Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
And welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And we're going to be taking you into, well, a level of experience that is not just mind, but it's body as well. But it's a perspective that sometimes is uncomfortable for people to talk about unless they've had the experience themselves. I have, and I have always been fascinated with it. What is that experience? It's often called OBE, out-of-body experience. Have you had anything like this? We've heard stories of people that go in for surgeries that have out-of-body experiences, traumatic events, out-of-body experiences. What is this? Well, my guest today, Luis Manero, is part of an institute. Actually, it's called the International Academy of Consciousness. Luis, as well as a number of other people around the world, have wanted to help people to understand that this is something that actually we all do. But can you do it consciously? Well, these questions and others we're going to be asking of Luis Manero, who's with us on the air right now. Luis, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Donna. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you to everybody.
I am very interested in the fact that you're a man that went to college, you're highly educated, you're a chemistry specialist, you graduated with honors from Florida International University, but you got involved in out-of-body experiences, and you have been working with people since 1996 so that they can consciously do this. Now, I have been aware that this is something you can train yourself for, and your book, Demystifying the Out-of-Body Experience, is something that has so much information in it. You've developed different terminologies. Tell your story about how your life was changed by an out-of-body experience, and also let us know why you decided to make it your life's work. Why is this so important? I've literally asked you three questions.
Yes, that's okay. That's all right. You know, and sometimes many people ask me that, you know, what does a chemist have to do with, you know, out-of-body experiences, with this field that for most people, I guess, they would say that is in, you know, the metaphysical or the New Age arena, mm-hmm. so to speak. But really, I started to have out-of-body experiences spontaneously when I was around 12, more or less, so I was a boy. And at the beginning, I didn't know that there was a name. You know, I didn't know if everybody had them, if nobody had them, or that there were books. I just simply had them. But they were so obvious, so clear. I found myself many times, you know, in the middle of the night, completely aware and awake and conscious, you know, floating in my house, floating about the room. Sometimes I could see, we had a little dog, and I could see the dog, you know, going from room to room. And I would just play around, you know, at that age and with the experience. But it was so clear to me. And, of course, in several opportunities, I got to see my body in bed, which I have to say the first time, you know, surprised me a little bit, and that caused me to come back into the physical body. So for me, this was always a part of myself, the out-of-body experiences. And something that I always tell people is that just because you're doing out-of-body experiences or any type of out-of-body experiences doesn't mean that you have to lose your logic or your discernment, which is where precisely the science part comes in, you know, which has also helped me a lot, you know, to try to be a little bit more grounded, more straightforward, more direct, so to speak. And it was really more or less around the time that I was in college, finishing my chemistry degree, that I had already read several books, but I found the organization, the IAC, the International Academy of Consciousness, they actually had just arrived in Florida. And because I had had the experiences, I became very interested in their studies. And pretty soon I started to dedicate more of my time, towards working with them. And I do this more than anything because we see, I think, in my opinion, that there is a lot more benefit that come to people, by having out-of-body experiences than by mimicking solutions in a laboratory that I was good at, but I think that there are a lot of other people that are very good at that too. Mm-hmm. So it's more than anything because of the benefit that can come to the individuals.
All right, before we go into the benefits, I'd like to bring out a little bit of the history that in your book, Demystifying the Out-of-Body Experience, gives. In 1994 in Brazil, there was a medical doctor by the name of Waldo Vieira, and he had a book that he put out, 700 Conscientology Experiments.
Yeah, and Conscientology.
That's amazing.
Indeed, 700 Conscientology Experiments. I know the pronunciation is difficult. It takes a while to get a hold of it.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of his books. Another one of his books was also the book of Projectology. So Projectology is the study of the out-of-body experiences, and Conscientology is the study of the consciousness. So consciousness, Conscientology. And the way, I guess, the term consciousness is used is beyond just simply being aware. We use the term the consciousness to refer to the essence or to the intelligent principle that we are independent of the physical body, that I guess most people, we call it the soul or the spirit. And the idea is that through the out-of-body experiences or the tool of the out-of-body experiences gives us the possibility to observe the soul in a very different condition. So we all have a physical body. We all have been observing other individuals, and we understand the physical reality very well because we have had observations with the physical body. So we know about economy and society and relationships, etc. But the moment that we have out-of-body experiences, I don't know how clear this is going to be, we can start to see souls not, in their temporary physical life, but we can start to see souls in the wild, in their natural habitat. And the out-of-body experience affords us this type of an observation, and which is exactly the same thing that people that have near-death experiences that you were, relating a moment before, that they also observe, that they leave the body, they find relatives that have already passed away, they have these wonderful experiences, and also, with the out-of-body experience, you can have the same without the near-death part, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and the experience I had, I was in my 20s when I had it, and I just gotten involved in developing my own intuitive skills. And when I was having these experiences, and it was one early, very early morning after midnight. I remember that much at the time. But I found myself turning around in my body. And it was such a unique sensation. And I could see. And my eyes weren't open. And it was before I totally came back into the body.
Right.
And it was this very strange sensation. And I remember a gentleman that I had a very deep respect for, and I told him what my experience was, and I remember him giving me some kind of an understanding, but it wasn't what he did not have his own experience to relate to an out-of-body experience. And as it turned out, there was an author whose name was Tuzdi Lobsang Rampa.
Rampa, yes.
Yes, a Tibetan Lama. And I happened to go into a bookstore, pulled that book out of the shelf. It really grabbed me. And in there, he described it. I was son of a gun. That's what happened to me. And I thought, this is really fascinating stuff. So that, many years ago, opened up the door of understanding, and I think that this is something your book, Demystifying the Out-of-Body Experience, can be invaluable, because when people have things like this going on, and if they're in an environment where there is a lot of fear, I really think understanding and knowledge is so important. And Wagner Allegretti, he says in his foreword in the book, knowledge is the best vaccine against fear. I love those words. Knowledge is the best vaccine against fear. And this is something when it comes to the intuitive self, when it comes to out-of-body experiences, this is so important. You don't need to be afraid. Let's talk about, your book has more than one section to it. And it really is part of what you'd call course material. Now, chapter one in the book deals with the fundamental concepts. Chapter two deals with bioenergy. Chapter three, it talks about being out and about. Chapter four, how to. So there's exercises in the book. Chapter five is extra physical consciousness. And then also chapter six is consciental maturity. Chapter seven is planning a life. So you have this segmented. And personally, I think being involved with other people is a great way to develop a sense of confidence. And if you have fears, getting rid of it. And obviously, your organization offers those courses. But let's talk about the basics. There are people that will, like you, at a young age, have experiences, and like me, have certain experiences, but they go, I don't get it. Why is this significant? How can it serve any value? Now, this is very important, because people, you can't bring anything back. You go somewhere, you travel, you see things, you can't bring anything back. We know about remote viewing and out-of-body the projections. This is nothing new. Human beings have had these experiences since the beginning, whenever that was. But understanding the value of it, and every culture has its different understanding and expression about this. What is the value of being able to mindfully doing the out-of-body experiences? What is that value?
Yeah, you know, starting first with what you were just mentioning, you know, that again, knowledge is power and it's the best vaccine against any fear, certainly. So what we bring, we cannot bring anything tangible or any object, so to speak, but we bring information, we bring experiences, we bring learning. And in a general sense, certainly that's the biggest gift, so to speak. But in a very specific sense, you know, with the out-of-body experiences, people can overcome, for example, the fear of death, which unfortunately is still very prevalent, I would say, you know, because you realize by your own experiences that you exist independently of the physical body and that you're going to survive the physical death. So that is certainly a very big thing. Another thing is, through the out-of-body experience, you can get a better understanding of who we are, not just as a human being, but who we are, you know, as an essence, like I was mentioning before, as a soul, as a spirit. Beyond that, people sometimes use the physical body because they want to gather information, find out more what is their life purpose or their life task. And what you see when you have out-of-body experiences is that many people before being born, and you see this in there's a certain range of dimensions, let's put it this way, in which people are, before being born, they are planning their main projects or their main tasks, their main objectives, and then the out-of-body experience helps them to understand what was my initial intention for deciding to come into this physical life, you know, in the first place, so to speak. Beyond that, some people sometimes are more interested in trying to help or assist other individuals while they are in their out-of-body experiences. So we can go, for example, and give energies to somebody, just to name one example. Aside from that, we can also have experiences where we leave the body and we encounter these more evolved, developed beings and positive and that, you know, want to help us, and we have given them as human beings, as societies, we have given them so many names. So we call them of masters or illuminated beings or helpers or angels, etc., etc. And then in an out-of-body experience, you can be face-to-face with them and you can consult things, you can ask them things. Just to summarize a huge chapter, you know, in a few sentences, in essence, what they want is they want to give us information that is going to help us to enrich our life, that is going to help us to grow as an individual and to make our life better. And, you know, only this benefit, I would say, is already worth it beyond everything else. But besides that, you know, people certainly can leave their body and they can go and visit, for example, a relative or a friend, you know, that is very far on another city, on another state, on another country, et cetera, et cetera. And these are certainly very interesting types of experiences. I have had, experiences with other colleagues of mine and with other relatives of mine. And what is interesting about those types of experiences is that it takes away the subjectivity of the experience. You know, certainly none of us, we don't doubt the existence of dreams. But what we dream about is very subjective because, of course, if we say last night I dreamt that I was in New York, there is absolutely no proof that I can offer, you know, for that. Mm-hmm. But not so with the out-of-body experience, because you can have an out-of-body experience with somebody else or with more than one individual, and now the experience is not only yours. So it takes away part of the subjectivity of the experience. And so this is something else. I say this because, you know, sometimes we get individuals even on certain lectures in different places that, of course, are more interested are more interested in trying to understand, you know, the verification part, the proving part. How do I prove this to myself? And this certainly is a good way of doing it, of going about it. So different people do it for different reasons. Some individuals, that the main reason why they do it, the main benefit that they see in this, is precisely going out and trying to find or to make contact with their loved ones that have already passed away. Mm-hmm. And something also that is feasible, by all means.
I think that there's many different experiences that people have. I know my granddaughter had an experience of her own when she was 8 years old, and she was telling me about it and how she saw her relatives on the other side. And she was in this big gathering, and everybody, that she said, many of them I didn't know, but she knew they were related to her, and they were talking to her. They were explaining this to her.
Yeah.
She was 8 years old. And so many times children have these experiences, and because of my background and my knowledge, then I was able to talk with her about this and make her aware, because she's very talented, she's very gifted. And it may not evolve for her as it has for me, but yet we were able to communicate very openly about this. She felt safe in communicating, and I think that's important. So many times people will have experiences. I know, I've had many clients through the years. They're afraid to talk to people about these experiences because they're going to be considered loony. Now, I do know for a fact that you don't use this as an escape from life. You don't. It is meant to enhance your life. It's meant to make you aware that there's much more to life and its expression than you could ever, ever imagine.
That's
but
right.
There's something in your book that I really respect, because the statement right at the very beginning of this textbook is, you must question, you must analyze, and critique. Now, this is a big step away from the general disposition of so many environments that will say, oh, you've got to do it this way, and that's the only way. And I will tell people, it's not the way it goes. Everybody's very unique. Everybody's experience is unique to them. There might be a common thread. It's understanding it. But don't be afraid to be critical. Don't be afraid to ask question. And if someone tells you that what you're experiencing is stupid or dumb or whatever, move on. Find someone else that can help you really understand what's occurring. Don't be afraid. Be willing to explore. And fortunately, in today's world, there are so many people that are going through these various out-of-body experiences. Most of them we hear about are people that have maybe gone through some kind of a trauma. But a lot of people don't have to go through trauma to go through this. It's not a, this is something you can learn, but you must understand there are necessary protocols, I'll use that term, that are going to enhance this. And you want to be, and you go through this in your book very nicely, you want to make sure you're in a safe environment. In other words, where you're not going to have a phone jarring you out, because it will jar you back in when you go. So let's talk about just a light expression. If someone wanted to have what you call lucid projections, an out-of-body experience, and they're totally aware of this, and they leave their body. Yogis have done this. There's mystics that have done this forever. But here's this information that's available if someone is willing to learn the discipline, and that's a key. It is a discipline. So explain that, please.
Yeah, indeed. Let me even comment a little bit about what you were saying, you know, of don't be afraid to critique. Also, at the beginning of the book, I start with the phrase, don't believe in anything, not even in what is written here in this book, but, you know, experiment, have your own experiences. And certainly that I think it's empowering, because instead of somebody telling you how things are going to go, we can give you like a guideline, but now the person has the capacity and the person can go and find out how things actually go. So we value a lot the personal experience of the individual. Now, with regards to what can we do to leave the body, there are many things. First of all, maybe trying to be very practical. The ideal would be for the person to try to be in a place where they are undisturbed. If possible, they can lock the door, they can diminish the stimulus, relax the physical body. The second step would probably be for them to start to work with their energy body or their etheric body or energosoma. Really, there have been so many names, but this is the body that has the chakras and the meridians. So if we can learn to activate that body, and there are different techniques. One of them is, for example, moving the energies inside our body from the head to the toes and from the toes to the head back again, and continuing doing this almost like in a yo-yo fashion, you know, to try to activate the body. And by activation, I mean you're going to arrive at a state that is called the vibrational state, and then the person is going to feel this vibratory internal condition. And if we reach a strong enough vibratory condition, the astral body or the psychosoma inside or the emotional body basically detaches from the physical body. So this specific technique that I am giving here, I know in my book I give, you know, 12 or 15 or so, but this specific one that I'm giving here, going through energies, is that this yo-yo motion induces the vibrations, and the vibrations induce the out-of-body experiences. And many, even classic projectors from history, their technique for having out-of-body experiences was precisely inducing these vibrations. And many people also who have had spontaneous, involuntary out-of-body experiences, they describe how in the middle of the night they are woken up by this vibrations, and from this condition, you know, they're able to have an out-of-body experience. So that would be one way of going about it, certainly through the technique of activation of our energies.
Something I was intrigued with is that when you were discussing the chakras, and this is very common in conversation today, you bring out a point that there's 88,000 chakras,
yes,
in the body. And I thought, now, this is something I've never heard anybody say before. There's been statements by many individuals that we've got a lot more than the 7 or 8 chakras that are often described. Let's go into that a little bit, because
okay,
that brings in a whole new paradigm of thought.
Okay. And, you know, by the way, certainly most of the lines of knowledge, most of the philosophies or, you know, cultures that have information about this, most of them, they usually dedicate or they spend most of their time talking about the 7 main ones for sure. And this is why it's so well known. But beyond that, let me see, for example, in acupuncture, they already work with hundreds of them. So if, you know, if people have been to the acupuncture, it's probably something that they might have seen, is that they many times have like a little doll on top of their desk with all the points that where you put the needles, so mm-hmm. to speak. And so they already work with, you know, hundreds of them. Really, I don't remember how many is it that that they mainly use. So certainly that's you know, already hundreds of them. But yes, there are several studies and several things that have been performed, you know, to try to figure out how many they are. And in the book, even when I have this statement of the 88,000 chakras, I have the bibliographical references, because several cultures, especially in Asia, you know, have done this, but also in South America, of trying, you know, to get an estimate of the amount of chakras. Of course, this is an estimate, and this is the reason why the about 88,000 chakras. It's more or less like when people say, you know, the human head has about 110,000 hairs. And I know not everybody, but, you know, mm-hmm. when we are young, we still have our 110,000 hairs. And yes, I probably don't have that many anymore, but, you know, it's an estimate. So what you do, obviously, is you count a little bit, you count a few, and then you multiply by the surface that is covered by, you know, by the surface that is covered by chakras or by hairs, actually. And the better the sample, you know, and the more you can repeat this, you know, the more accurate the estimate is going to be. And so that's, you know, where this statement and where this comes about. Now, adding to this, maybe something that might be interesting is that with regards to the out-of-body experience, when you are outside the body, you are able to see the chakras of people very clearly. The sight, the vision of the psychosoma or of the astral body, you know, is such that we can see very well, you know, the energy points in the body of other individuals. Actually, that is as easy outside the body to see the energy points as inside the body it is for us to see, you know, hairs or features of the face. So it's something that is easily done, you know, outside the body.
I think that this is often the procedure that the shamans were trained in, so that they could actually make evaluations. And I recall someone saying, and this was many years ago, that when the lights of the body were out, they knew where the sickness was, and they would be able to evaluate and then do whatever process for healing was necessary. And I think that relates very strongly to what you have said. This book is really quite interesting, Demystifying the Out-of-Body Experience, and the subtitle on it is A Practical Manual for Exploration and Personal Evolution. Now, this is a subject matter that, believe it or not, is discussed on many different levels by people, maybe different terminology, but I really think that if this is an arena you yourself would like to explore, if you have had out-of-body experiences, if you're curious about this, go to learnobes.com. That's out-of-body experiences. That's an abbreviation, learnobes.com. And you'll find out more about the International Academy of Consciousness. Luis Manero, it has been a delight having you as a guest today. Would you like to leave a thought with my audience before we close out our chat?
I think that maybe what I would say is, don't be afraid to explore. Don't be afraid to experience, because really the universe and the universe of knowledge is so, so much more vast than what we imagine. And really people themselves, we are also so much, much more than what we see right now in this physical reality. So don't be afraid to explore. By all means, go for it. Like Nike says, just do it.
Just do it. Luis Manero has been my guest. He's the executive director of the IAC, the International Academy of Consciousness in California. The book, again, is Demystifying the Out-of-Body Experience. Check out the website, learnobes.com. Also, it's iacworld.org. Both both of those websites you can get the information through. Luis, thank you so much for being my guest. I wish you continued success.
Thank you so much, Donna, for the opportunity.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I'm so delighted that you're sharing this time with me this morning. If you'd like to chat with me, I would be delighted to do that. Let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. 008. I wanted to share some data with you that has crossed my desk this past couple of days. We often, as we did last week, we had a guest on who is a pharmacist, and we were talking about pharmaceuticals and things like this and all of the ads that we see on television. And when you hear all of the side effects that you can experience from taking medications, when you read about them, it makes your eyes cross. You go, oh my goodness, is this really something I want to put in my body? Well, there is a woman. Her name is Kim Wischek, and I could be mispronouncing her name, but this is out of Consumer Reports. And apparently in 2003, her husband, Woody, killed himself. He had been taking a prescription medicine whose side effect of suicidal thoughts wasn't fully disclosed by the drug company. So this lady, Kim, she is a Minneapolis marketing consultant. She's been advocating for drug safety, disclosure of drug trials, stronger oversight of medical devices, and curbs on direct-to-consumer drug ads. This last February, she organized a conference. It was co-sponsored by the Consumers Union with consumer advocates, academics, and journalists to tackle misleading marketing of drugs and medical devices, medical research that's biased by industry ties, and a lot more. Now, if you'd like to find out about this, there is a website called safepatientproject.org, safepatientproject.org. We are waking up, and it's so important to understand that we can be supportive of right action. Medicine is always an evolving process. It is amazing how far we've come, yet at the same time, how backwards we are becoming in some respects, how blind we're becoming. So a lot of the agitation that we're going through, personally, I think it's a good thing because we're learning how to question. We must question. We must find out what is the value of something. And if it's not valued, just like Kim, this woman said, my husband wanted to live. He didn't want to die. What was this that was causing this effect in his brain? It was the drug. And when she went further into her investigation, she said, this is enough. My husband's dead because of this. Other people need to know. So she has marketing background. She understands about communication. Now, here's a little bit of information that just might absolutely astonish you. Maybe not. It didn't surprise me. $84 million. That's a big number, $84 million. That is how much that the pharmaceutical company spent on marketing products in the nation's capital, just in the capital with lobbyists in 2011. There was a report done by researchers at George Washington University on pharmaceutical gifts and advertising in Washington, D.C. Considers whether the money influences doctors' prescribing choices to the detriment of patients, and drug reps appear to have treated some doctors to meals as often as once a week. Let me share something with you that I experienced. This was a few years ago. I was on a trip to Atlanta in Georgia, and I got to know someone who was in the media whose husband owned this beautiful B&B. I mean, it was just gorgeous. It was an old plantation that had been totally renovated. And he would host conferences, and he was stunned to find out about a pharmaceutical conference that was done with doctors and the bill for bringing in gourmet food and all kinds of things. He said to me, when I learned what was going on, and how basically, using this man's words, the doctors were being bribed to try the medication or to give it away as free samples to patients. And he said, this is something I've seen more than once. I've been witness to these conferences. And I thought to myself, very interesting. Well, it's not news to me. It's something I've known about, and this involves many different industries. However, it is time for a lot of information to come out, and this is something that has been done. It's not a big ballyhoo about it, but it is something that has been going on in the medical industry, and just like so many areas of life, there comes a time when what you might say the down effect of this, the lack of integrity, the lack of clear information, comes gurgling up. It's like contaminated water, and it ends up bringing a lot of bad stuff out into the air. So this is good news in the sense that it's going to be read by millions of people. Like I said, this just crossed my desk over this weekend, and it's important to pay attention to it. It's not just throwing rotten eggs at someone just because we're having a bad day or we want to blame somebody. It is accountability, holding industries, individuals accountable for what they do. It's very, very important because that sets the standard. When you have a standard that's an excellent standard and you have the expectation of that standard fulfilling it, you demand that standard of excellence, makes a difference. It really does. Whether you're teaching kids, you raise the bar, they'll step up to it. Or you're in industry, you raise the bar, the expectations have to be higher. I don't care what it is. It really does make a difference. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listening to the show, I'm so delighted you've joined us. And just know all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then, of course, I always want to know where you're calling in from. But after that, just sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that is of importance to you. 888-627-6008. Are you an artist? Have you ever used tubes of color? Well, I'm going to be sharing with you in just a moment history on how that came about. Fascinating stuff, really. So much of what we take for granted. We never ask, where did this come from? Who got the idea? Why was it an idea of value? Why is it still in existence today? Well, we'll find out about one item. I want to share with you tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the five seasons. Joseph Cardello, this is a wonderful, wonderful man who has put together an insightful, heartwarming insight into five seasons. And then we're going to be talking with Terry Pierce this week on Leading Out Loud. Everyone is a leader in one form or another. How do we do that mindfully? How do we take our position and place in life, whatever level it might be in, and be the best we can possibly be so we can inspire others? Also, we're going to be talking with Joseph Leonardo later this week, Obesity Undone. This guy weighed over 400 pounds. When I saw the image of him, I look at the image of him now, I go, this can't be the same guy. It couldn't possibly be. We're going to hear about his story. Also, Marta Williams, a delightful lady who has a passion for animals. She talks about animals. Her book is titled My Animals, Myself, and How Her Animals Have Been Her Teachers. I think you'll find all of these people absolutely wonderful to listen to. Tell your friends about the Donna Sebo Show, because we always enjoy sharing the knowledge with you of some wonderful people. There are a lot of good people in this world, and their voices are being heard, especially on my show, and I'm delighted to bring them to you. I wanted to share a little bit of information with you, and again, the telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008, because I know we've got a break coming up, and then I'll give you the touch of history. Car accessories, yes. We've all been fascinated with various movies, like the James Bond movies and these automobiles and these high-tech items that were put together in someone's mind. Well, so many of them today have actually evolved. The military is using the stuff where the eye can witness and just see all kinds of things at a distance. And you have, it's just so much technology is evolving. The Star Trek, the doctor holding a handheld item, being able to scan a person's body, find out what's going on, that's evolving also. That is actually in place. It's not as sophisticated as it's going to evolve to be, but it's happening. Well, here are some things that cars have had. Now, they really didn't take off very well. And the one in 1956, there was a Chrysler DeSoto and Dodge and Plymouth models offered something that was a precursor to our DVD players. What was it? The record player. That's right. And those things were sizable. Well, this was a turntable that slid out from beneath the dashboard to play vinyl records at the touch of a button. Aha. You didn't know about that, did you? I didn't know about it. I had no clue that this is something that was done in the 50s. I don't think it went over very well. Also, in the 40s, the late 40s, there was a vehicle called the Tucker Sedan. Now, Tucker was a very innovative designer for automobiles, and he was literally taken out by the big automakers. His story, if ever you read about it, there was a movie made about Tucker and how he was destroyed. But in 1948, he had designed an additional headlight in the center of the Tucker sedan's hood, and it was capable of swiveling along with the car steering wheel for improved visibility when you turn corners. That's right. He was a very innovative man. Now, only 51 were ever built. And the extra headlight had to be hidden behind a cover because of laws in 17 states prohibiting more than two headlights on a car. Tucker's story is amazing. If you ever get a chance to watch the movie, you ought to watch it. It's really fascinating. And this one, an invisible gas cap. For a more streamlined look, some car makers tried to hide the fuel caps behind taillights and rear license plates. In 1956, and of course, they eventually got it streamlined. In 1956, the Chevy Bel Air featured a real rear headlight that would flip down to reveal the gas cap. The practice was discontinued when safety experts pointed out that in a rear-end collision, even a small bump could create a dangerous gasoline leak. Well, I've got an old Cadillac that has the gas tank in the rear, and the license plate covers it. So they still kept it, and they adapted it. Of course, there is a safety cover in there, and there's all kinds of things that they adapted. But these are just some of the innovations that people came up with. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. When we come back, I'm going to share with you some more innovative thinking. This is Donna. We'll be back in just a moment.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. And if you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008 is the number. Innovation. Well, there are innovators around the world, but there was an American that actually changed the world of painting. Yes, the artistic world. Now, he was an American portrait painter. His name was John G. Rand. Now, what did John do that made the world of art revolutionize its techniques? What is it? Well, it was how to contain paint so that it wouldn't dry out on you before you applied it to a canvas. This is the story. And I don't know about you, but I go into any of these box stores or paint stores, specialty stores. We have literally thousands of shades that we can pick up on. If you are an oil painter, if you use acrylics, you have got all kinds of paints that are available to you. It's incredible. Well, this was not always the case. Actually, in the 1800s, and that's when John Rand lived, he was in Charleston. He was a Charleston native living in London in 1841. Now, his oil paints, whenever he worked with them, it was a real struggle to keep them from drying out before he could use them. And if you have done any reading about Michelangelo, you know they used egg yolks, they used all kinds of things. So you had to work quickly. Otherwise, your paints would dry out on you. Now, at the time, and for a long time, the way they would store paint was using a pig's bladder. You're hearing me correctly. I didn't know that. The paint would be made up. They'd put it in a clean pig's bladder, and they'd tie the pig's bladder with a string. And then what they would do, they would take a tack, something very sharp, very tiny, to get at the paint, you know, at the paint. But they didn't have duct tape then. They couldn't seal the hole that they had made. So it really was a challenge. It was something that was really not pleasurable as a challenge because, one, once you punctured it, you could never really seal the hole again. And these bladders didn't travel very well. And think of the way they traveled. It was on horseback or if they walked. That thing, if that burst on you, oh, yes, wonderful, fun time. Paint would be all over everything. Well, Rand invented the paint tube. That's right. That's exactly what he invented. It was made from tin and sealed with a screw cap. And he designed it so that you could roll it up from the bottom. It had a long shelf life. It didn't leak. And you could open and close it repeatedly. You could put out, squeeze out what you wanted to use and mix colors at the same time. Now, what's interesting is when this revolutionary storage container of oil paint, was specifically at that time with oil paint. They didn't have acrylic. French painters just were, oh, we can't do this because the price of the paint went up quite a bit. However, this is what enabled the Impressionist era to just literally explode. They could take their tubes of paint, their brushes, they could go anywhere. And for the first time in an artist's history, they could produce a finished oil painting on site, wherever that might be. Now, one that did this, Claude Monet, he did an 1885, a canvas called Waves at the Manaport. Beautiful, beautiful painting. And he was an Impressionist, obviously, and he had the colors red, blue, violet, yellow, and green. And they said he and his easel were nearly swept off of the beach where he was doing the painting of this. And in the original Monet, there are literally specks of sand that were blown into his painting. Now, one of the big pluses that occurred with the development of this tin tube was the fact that new colors could be developed. Now, paint pigments had remained nearly unchanged since the Renaissance, and oil paints were really, really time-consuming to produce and very quick to dry out. So artists typically would only use a few colors to work with during a painting session and would fill in just one area of a canvas at a time. Well, you know, like a blue or green dress or whatever. They had to work very, very, very fast. However, once the colors started coming out in tubes, new colors were invented by industrial chemists of the 19th century. So Impressionists just were overjoyed. They went through this and just had a fabulous time. And, of course, artists of all venues really enjoy it, and they enjoy it to this day. And tubes, well, they're there. They're still there. And you can go in, buy a little bit, buy a lot, whatever it is that you like. But all of this came about because of one man's inventiveness, an artist living in London, John G. Rand, who was an American portrait painter. Fascinating story. You see, one person can affect millions. And how many of you knew about this man? I didn't. And you know what? I wasn't even in the least bit concerned about asking a question about how did this develop? Where did it come from? I think sometimes it's a good idea just to look at whatever product or item you have in your hand and go, how did this come about? Who came up with this idea? And do some research on it. I think you'll find it fascinating. Inventiveness, well, it's all about it. Whether it's developing a new cookie recipe to bringing something in the way of technology to make this world a better place, all of us contribute in a very special way, and you never know how it will affect the lives of others. And go on, as John Rand's invention still is going on today. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Thank you so much for being with me today. I look forward to having you join me tomorrow as we talk about the five senses. Enjoy your day. Enjoy the summer. Blessings. Remember always again, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day or evening, wherever you are. Bye for now. This is Donna Sebo. It's been wonderful being with you. Tomorrow we'll be back here, same time, same place. Have a magnificent day and enjoy that magic time. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.